Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on the April Fool's Day, April with no show. No. It's April Fool's, April 1st.
It is.
Yeah.
Did you hear any good pranks, anything?
No, you know, I think it's old. I think it's over the hill. The internet has ruined April Fool's.
Yeah. Well, it used to be, I mean, you need more substance these days, right? Something that's much more stirring than a stupid little, you know, little thing. I think that Janet Yellen had a great April Fool's. How was that?
Yeah. Well, explain it.
Well, basically, a couple of weeks ago, she said, you know, hey, listen, about 6 months after the end of the bond purchases, when that program ends, we're probably going to start raising rates. And Street got all upset. Oh, my gosh, there's an actual date on it. And then yesterday she comes out on Monday with a commentary that, you know, the markets or the economy still needs extraordinary – what she said? I think I put this here. The extraordinary commitment is still needed and will be for some time. And I believe that this view is widely shared – by my fellow policymakers. Well, you know what happened there. Markets are like, hoo-hoo!
Free money.
Yep. And today, just like that, through all that went on, S&P hit a record today.
Just stunning. I'm shocked.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's after a kind of an okay manufacturing number, some lousy numbers from China. But it is clear that the Fed is, you know, she obviously made a rookie mistake. She, you know, fumfered her way, and during her conversation with the press, her first press release, press conference, and they said to her, get out there and make it right. So there you go. You know, by the way, speaking about the Fed stimulus, so there was about $4.3 trillion that was added to the balance sheet of the Fed through various different methodologies and payments and bond buying and all that, okay?
Mm.
There was about 4 million jobs that were saved or added or created or something.
Saved more than anything.
So that's about $1 million per job.
Yeah.
You think that's – does that work out,
I
think?
I don't know why they just don't give people the $1 million.
Yeah.
Bob Smith, you're next.
Yeah. Next in line.
Give everybody $100,000. It would have saved at least $3 trillion.
Right. Amazing. Huh. So now, I just mentioned that we see that the S&P's had a record. The NASDAQ had a fabulous day today. Now, remember something. The NASDAQ really was weak. All right. The social media, the tech stuff, they were really weak, except for Microsoft, which, by the way, I don't know if I told you this, but I'm done with the whole Microsoft thing. I went back to the Apple. Did I tell you that?
Yeah, you told me in the last show, and you've been moaning about this for show after show.
Yep, I'm not moaning anymore. I'm done. So now Microsoft was up again. It's over like 41 and change. And the NASDAQ had a great day, up about 1.75% on the NASDAQ 100. It was just flying. This is after this major drawdown. And according to John Butters, who is senior earnings analyst at FactSet, which collects data, 93 of the 111 companies in the S&P 500 that have issued an earnings outlook for the first quarter have guided below Wall Street's consensus estimate. And this is the second highest number of companies issuing warnings since they began tracking it back in 2006.
Reason enough for the market to fly.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of reasonable. I put a little chart up there, the one with the bar chart. But amazing that there is such an incredible amount of, I guess, optimism, or maybe it's not optimism. Maybe it's a feeling of safety, because the VIX dropped down pretty well today also. Maybe it's this feeling of safety that the Fed is just going to be there.
Well, yeah. Well, they're not going to be there forever. It's a myth.
that they perpetuate.
Yeah, but it's like at some point, you know, it's going to be. And I am telling you, when there's a crash, it'll be some sort of a – it won't be a massive crash that's going to last forever. It's going to be something of a crash. There has to be. They'll blame it on this. You watch.
The stimulus was withdrawn.
No. They'll blame it on the stimulus itself.
Oh. Something went crazy. I just – you know what? It's amazing to me that it's very clear that the Fed is trying to talk up the markets, because they know that they need to do so as they're withdrawing, stimulus. And it's very clear they want to. As a matter of fact, again, if you go back to 2008, 2009, 2010, continually they talked about they really need to have an exit plan. And yet the markets, even though there have been some very lukewarm or not even that great numbers out of who – out of the companies that have reported so far on the latter half of the last quarter, you know, I don't know. It's just it's a funny thing. I find it very interesting how there is such an incredible amount of rotation – that takes place. I mean, the biotechs were getting absolutely obliterated last month. The social media was just killed. Chinese stocks killed. And a lot of them just kind of made a big run. So there you have it. There's the big joke on all of us.
I think that sums it up.
Yep. Now, by the way, I was looking at our stocks. And what was interesting was we talked about this, that when the markets rolled over, really things got hit pretty hard. But over the last couple of weeks, the shorts and the longs, but the longs really have been moving. As a matter of fact, Fannie Mae, there was an interesting commentary that Bill Ackman, the hedge fund manager, upped his stake to like, I think it was 9% of the total value of the company, of Fannie Mae. That is some bet, if you think about it.
It's huge.
It's a huge bet with the thought that there is legislation to actually shut down the company.
Yeah. Yeah, he must know something.
I suppose. I mean, I guess he knows that there's no way this Congress and this administration has any teeth.
Yeah, that's what we've determined this before. Remember that when we did the McGraw-Hill long?
This is like a McGraw-Hill time, you know, the second or junior.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like lots of talk, and then if you bet against it, you win.
Right. Now, one of the things that we did see in the latest move of the markets was that dividend-paying stocks and big companies with very solid balance sheets were in vogue. So we saw that's why Microsoft, for example, was being bought. That's why you saw the Caterpillar, even though they had such a terrible number last quarter, has reached just about 100, I guess 99 change. And that's in the face of the fact that Caterpillar, did you see this? Caterpillar moved money into international subsidiaries to avoid about $2 billion in taxes over the past few years. And according to Carl Levin, he says, it's a fantasy land of international tax. Caterpillar waves a magic wand to make billions of dollars in U.S. taxes just disappear.
Okay, so here's the rhetorical question of the moment.
Yeah.
You as an individual, if you try ditching your money all over the world, you can put it in the account and not pay taxes on it. If you have it like in Gibraltar or wherever they let you have an account. Nowadays, it's pretty hard to open a foreign account up because their U.S. government's demanding records from all these guys. Mm-hmm. But the IRS will go after you, right?
Well, first of all, as a U.S. citizen, you are taxed on your worldwide income, wherever it is. It doesn't matter where it is.
Now, the idea that was expressed in the court case Citizens United that says a corporation is a person – should have the same effect via the IRS. The IRS should go after them on all earnings worldwide, right?
You would think so, but for whatever reason, the corporate tax code has some loopholes.
Well, the corporate tax code is one thing. Oh, you mean for the IRS?
Yeah.
The IRS. Well, it seems to me they have to normalize this because if a corporation is a person, as the Supreme Court says, then they should be the same, have the same responsibilities as a U.S. citizen. I just don't – it just makes nothing but sense to me.
Right.
And why would there be these loopholes in there? It's just costing the government money. They're going after everybody with a foreign bank account. Why wouldn't they – why would they let the corporations get away with this? It doesn't make any sense.
Right. And what they should do is they should take a look at this. And if a company sets up a subsidiary somewhere, it's no different than you and I setting up a bank account somewhere or setting up another company somewhere.
Right.
There's no difference.
No, it's the same.
But what happens in this case is they get to just, you know, it's gone. Well, it's only gone until they repatriate the assets.
Yes, so but that should be the same fairness with the individual then. It should be gone until you repatriate the assets. If you want to, for example, open up a bank account in Paris, and when you take your vacations over there, you never repatriate the money. You just spend it.
So if that was the case, shouldn't the corporations have a similar taxing structure? Because right now, the U.S. is the highest corporate tax in the world. So instead of, let's say, I'm just going to pull a number here.
But that high number is about what we pay in personal income tax. It's about 35%, I think, 33.
Yeah, it's actually 39.5 for corporate, but right. So it's not that far away, but it's still, all things being equal.
Well, if it made totally equal and they were taxed on all this foreign stuff,
right.
I wouldn't have lower it, it'd be fine. Lower it to 30, lower it to 25.
But nobody wants the companies to have lower earnings because that's good for, don't forget about something. Who's going to vote on this? It's going to be voted on by Congress, right? And Congress, all the congressmen and women have very nice portfolios.
Right, which they can legally trade with inside information.
Right. And if they, in fact, go after, two things happen. If they go after the corporations and they actually tax them and they're on the record as approving this, that first of all, they may see a drop in their valuation of their stocks, and they don't want that because it hurts their pocketbook. The second thing is that could exempt them from the potential of getting some kind of cushy job with some corporation later on in life.
Do you think they do that? You mean quit working for the public and then go work for a company that they were backing the whole time? You think that could happen?
It's possible. Hmm. You know, I've heard of stranger things than that. But, you know, listen, we know that Congress – Listen, the day after he quit, Bernanke's already working and making all sorts of money, writing books, doing speeches. That brings me to a question.
Yes?
I don't know if you know this, but what does a Federal Reserve banker, the various chairs and the governors, what do they do? I mean, if they're always speaking and they're always out there making commentary all over the place at luncheons and all that, do they actually do any research?
I don't know what they do. It's always looked like a drinking club to me. They have a back room. They get around. There's probably some fourth parties that come in and show them some numbers and say you should do this, you should do that. I don't know. I have no idea if even that takes place. I have no idea.
How great if one day it comes out that they're in some kind of club, this private club with hookers and cocaine and stuff. I mean,
these guys do not seem like the hookers and cocaine types.
No,
J.P. Morgan guys, Goldman Sachs guys, those guys, the guys that were in the Wolf of Wall Street type of guy, they do. But these central bankers, they seem pretty boring.
But I really don't. If all they're doing is constantly just cheerleading and talking about how, you know, things are and trying to, I mean, I just don't understand how they are doing any research more than just getting the reports from their staff on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And just keeping abreast of it and being the mouthpiece
of
the Fed.
Yeah, that's probably what they do.
It's
a good job.
Yeah.
You should have gone into banking.
This is why I'm asking you. I was wondering if you knew what the applications were to get that position.
I think it's all graft.
Yes. Oh, no, really? let's see now. Average gasoline in U.S., the prices are up when, of course, oil is moving down. As a matter of fact, there was a call for oil at 75 just this week. I think that was interesting.
Wow.
Yep. That was from a major firm, too. But gas prices in the U.S. are up from about $3.54 on average a week earlier. In all regions, they climbed except in the Rocky Mountains, where they slipped 6 cents.
Huh.
Midwest saw the biggest rise in gasoline, 4 cents to $3.58. Most expensive gasoline was, of course, right where you are in California, $3.85.
Yeah, paying
cheapest
for
gas in the Gulf Coast. I think that's us. Is that me?
Yeah, pretty much.
I think it's the west side of it, but yeah. Now, the other thing I want to mention is this week we do have the big report. Now, tomorrow morning is the ADP report, which gives us the private payrolls. And the expectation here is that we're going to see a big relief after all of the weather and all the issues that were surrounding that. We're going to see a pretty big number, a reasonable number.
You think?
Well, supposedly. This is what we're showing. About 200,000 ads. Well, that's not huge, but 200,000 ads, 6.6 unemployment rate. And I still get back to something. I'm really having a difficult time with this. If the economy is kind of cruising along, all right, so GDP is not that great, but it's still about 2.6 to 3. And the unemployment rate, okay, not that great. It's still in the 6.5. But I think there's some structural underlying issues that are causing some of that. But okay. And corporate profits are the highest they've ever been. And you can go down the list, housing prices and all that. Why does the Fed need to continue with this incredible amount of stimulus?
because if these numbers would all go south if they didn't.
Yeah, but still, it just seems like it's totally.
They have a guy with a calculator.
Oh.
He's in one of those rooms. He's poking at it, and he comes up with this, we got to keep this going, or otherwise we're screwed.
Mm.
And I think half these numbers are bogus anyway. I don't think, I've said it before a million times on the show. I talk about shadow stats and their unemployment number. Let's take a look and see if it's still going up or flattened out or what, which is always
fun. Is it shadowstats.com?
Yeah. Yeah, shadow.
We should get them to advertise.
We should go to our paywall soon.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about that.
Oh, shadow stats. I got an O in there for some reason. Okay, here's the alternate inflation chart. It looks pretty, tracking pretty normally. It's not going off the deep. Well, you know, the unemployment number has not improved, the real number, the one that would have been calculated in the 30s. It's still pushing its way to 25%. You could probably argue that it's flat at about 23.5.
Now, just get back to the inflation number. Look at that inflation chart for me. Are you telling me that on the alternative inflation, even through shadow stats, it's not rising? Because we saw a tremendous move in food prices this year. Coffee up 69% just this year, just in 2014. Corn up, I don't know, 18%. Wheat up 15%. Soybeans was flying again today, up a percent today, a couple percent yesterday. And you're not seeing any inflation?
According to these charts.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking you.
No.
Very troubling that there's no inflation.
Yeah, well, that's why they can keep pumping money into the system. As right. long as there's no inflation, or it's maintains itself in these, at this, well, officially sub 2%, but shadow stats 4%, but sliding very slowly down.
Let me make this analogy. If you have a boat and you're cruising along and the boat's taking on water, water's being poured into it purposefully. Okay? And you look in the bilge, and there's no buildup of water. What does that tell you? No, seriously.
Somebody's thirsty. I have no idea what it tells you. It tells me there's something phony going on.
You have a leak. Right?
If there was a leak, there'd be more water coming in.
Well, a leak of the water that's coming in is being bailed out somewhere else or being, you have a... something. It's
something
just
else is going on. Yes.
Right, it's being diverted. That water's, there's a hole in that tank that's pushing it out. Something's amiss. We're going to have to get to the bottom of this. All right. Now, it seems that every time the government tries to cut back on payments or do something in a budget that will, maybe hurt one party, but yet at the same time help somebody else, they go ahead and they vote on it. And what happens is that, okay, well, sorry, fellas, you're not going to get this payment because we're moving it over to this group. And somewhere down the line, not too far later, maybe a few months, they re-vote on it. And not only do they give to the other group, but they don't take away from the first group. And in other words, the payment that's supposed to be a zero line, this new benefit that there's no cost and no outlay because we're going to take from one and give to the other, is reversed.
Right.
And once again, in a 64-35 Senate vote on Monday, they cleared the measure for Obama's signature to allow for this $21 billion cut to Medicare reimbursements for doctors. This has gone on for a few years now. It keeps on expiring and expiring and expiring, and they keep on saying, okay, no, don't worry about it. We're not going to give you that cut. Don't worry, we're not going to give you that cut. So it cut its the payment for part of it, but again, they keep on going back to it and putting a little fix into it so that it doesn't actually occur.
Right.
It's a terrible system. I'm sorry. Just back
no,
that.
The system is – it sucks.
Yeah. Let's see. Europe – what the jobless rate is there?
Oh, 25, 30%. I don't know.
Well, some areas maybe. It's 11.9, the highest it's a little bit lower than it's been, but sticking on somewhere near the highest it's been. I think Italy's at 13.7 or so.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. So I've been always fascinated with headlines, especially on Bloomberg, because there's a headline that you read, And how many times you read a headline, you click it, the headline's the same, and you read the story. With Bloomberg, you see a headline, you click it, and then when you look at the story itself, the headline's totally different.
Yeah.
It's like it changes.
Yeah.
So there's a headline. I was wondering if you could tell me what this means. The Eurozone's manufacturing recovery became more balanced in March but slowed as pickups across much of its currency area were offset by a cooling Germany. What the hell does that mean?
Well, if we parse this, it says the Eurozone's manufacturing recovery became more balanced. Now, a recovery, we have to assume that balance must mean that the recovery is taking up across a lot of sectors and is evening out.
Okay, so
that whole thing itself is slowing. The recovery itself is slowing. I'm trying to make sense of this idiotic. It's not even a headline. It's just a long diatribe. So that effect of the recovery itself is slowing, balanced or not. And then as pickups across much of the currency area were offset by a cooling in Germany. I don't know what pickups means.
Well, it slowed, but so there was a recovery that became balanced and spread out. But that recovery in general slowed, but that slowing.
But the slowing was picked up, but offset. Okay, I got it. There were signs of increasing. This is what I'm thinking. Increasing recovery, but that would be the pickups. But this was offset by Germany slowing down, cooling.
I mean, this is a problem.
This sort of thing where you spend all your time trying to figure out what they're talking about?
Because it's ridiculous. This is the kind of crap that we get. This is the kind of stories you get also.
No, this is the talent. There's nobody working in the
industry. There's no talent. You know why? Because everybody has to be a journalist. This is the whole crapola with a stewardess is a flight attendant, and now a reporter is a journalist. And you know what? Why don't they just report? Why in business news? I would think of all the places in business news, just report the news. Stop with the whole storytelling and the whole trying to confuse and confound and make,
you know. It's funny that you'd say that because the storytelling thing is become a meme amongst a lot of these guys. Oh, you've got to make it into a story or it's boring.
Right.
You could also make it shorter and it won't be boring.
Right.
But, you know, okay.
Yeah.
And their storytelling stinks. I mean, I wouldn't mind a good story, but not when it's a convoluted mess like this.
That's a mess. That's just one sentence. We can go probably further into it, into the whole article.
I'm sure the whole thing is like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did see The Wolf of Wall Street finally this weekend.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think?
I thought it was very good. I mean, that was my time in Long Island.
Really?
I mean, right about then.
Hookers? Well,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying time. I didn't say my life experience.
Oh, I see.
When I was there.
Ah.
When I was there. I thought it was interesting that, and I didn't know this until the end, that he wrote the story. He wrote the book.
Yeah, the guy who's characterized.
So already you have to realize that he's a con man to begin with. So how much of the story is a con as well?
Yeah, I'm sure there's quite a bit. But I'm sure that Scorsese, who did the movie, along with, what's the actor's name? DiCaprio, the two of them produced it. I'm sure that that's what they were looking for. You're looking for a dramatized, fun story to tell.
And I thought it was a fantastic movie, a great story in terms of the reality of it. You know, okay, there's probably a chunk of it. I remember those days when I was getting solicited for these penny stock deals. And it's interesting. You see how they said there was a 50% markup or commission in the penny stocks, right?
Yeah.
You know how they did that? They would be on the phone with you and I'd say, hey, John, this stock is trading at looks like 12 cents or so. This is unbelievable and gives you the whole story. And you know what? Just let me call you back. I'll get you a print on it. How much do you want to spend? Well, I'll spend $5,000. Okay. So you come back and you tell them you got a print at, you know, 13. It was moving up or whatever. Well, meanwhile, the stock possibly was really trading at 10 cents.
Yeah.
But because there was no instant gratification of the internet and people having platforms and seeing what the pricing of things were, you could easily just go behind the scenes and mark it up anywhere you wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
So this guy...
Those days are over.
Yeah, they are over. Now, but like I said, I think it was a great movie. I think that DiCaprio was fantastic.
Yeah, he's very talented.
That was just amazing. And his wife was a hottie.
Well, I haven't seen the movie.
Oh, what do you mean?
No, I haven't seen it. I just know about it. And I've seen lots of pieces of it. I'm waiting for it to come out on HBO.
Yeah, possible. I bought it on Apple.
I don't buy it. You know, it seems to me the stuff comes out on HBO. What's the rush? Do I need to go see this movie tomorrow? You just saw it, so you know. I think.
No, listen. You could probably see Rocky soon. It's on HBO, I think. Really, all of them, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Okay, so the big news this week, the big hubbubaloo, is Michael Lewis's book. What is it called now? It's called something Boys. Fast Boys? No. Something Boys. Let's think about it here. High Frequency Trading Boys. Scamming Boys. I got to look this up. Anyway, this new book is all about high frequency trading. And the problem, it's called Flash Boys. Flash Boys. I guess what he's trying to say is they do flash trading and they may be responsible for the flash crash. But his new book is probably a bestseller these days. And he went all around and he's basically saying that the stock market is rigged. That there are these machines, which we know about, that can actually sniff out what you're going to trade, how you're going to trade it, and get right in front of it and make a little bit of an extra buck on it. And one of the things he talks about, which has stopped, was the paying for advanced information where a company like, let's say, Thomson Reuters would actually give the information, let's call it, on the unemployment rate 2 seconds earlier to some firms if they paid for it. And you may say, what's 2 seconds, right? Who cares?
Yeah, it's quite a bit of time in this world.
It's a lifetime of information of machines being able to actually get trades in. And just those, you know, just trading those extra things or being the first in line, maybe not trading before, but being the first in line to get it as things move is rather important. Yeah. And so he goes on and talks about this whole, you know, this whole thing. And there's a lot of rebuttals about this. You know, what Michael Lewis gets wrong about this. He really doesn't know about this. You know, on and on and on. I think from a layperson's standpoint, there's a lot of guts to this that are, you know, would make people very nervous. But, you know, you look at the gentleman that he is and the type of books that he wrote, The Big Short and Moneyball and Liar's Poker. You know, this is another storyteller that takes serious information and real life circumstances, and then what he does is he turns it into a story.
Yeah.
So there's just, if you look at a quick search on Google for Michael Lewis, you'll see across almost every comment is Wall Street Responds, new flawed book, what he got wrong, shame on you. You know, talking on and on about this and looking at this and, you know, saying that he got it wrong. Don't forget, the Wall Street machine, the PR machine, wants to really knock this down. They want to continue doing this. It's good for them. I didn't know he wrote The Blind Side. Did you know that?
No, I'm looking at this now.
Huh.
Yeah, he's quite a writer.
Yep.
Moneymaker.
He's a moneymaker.
Yeah, he's a moneymaker, so he does know how to tell a story. So he spins a yarn.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure some of it is exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is not well explained and could probably be excused out of the way if somebody else was there to say, wait a minute, but they didn't.
It looks like he was married 3 times.
Yeah, he's on his 3rd wife.
Hmm. Interesting. He went to Princeton. He went to the London School of Economics and Political Science and the Isidore Newman School in Wiley College?
Well, I guess it's some little school he went to before he went to Princeton.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess.
Right.
To get his grades up.
And his children's names is Dixie, Walker, and Quinn.
Actually, one of them, it's weirder than that. It's Dixie, yeah. Walker, Jack, and then Quinn Tallulah.
Tallulah?
Yeah, the middle name of Quinn. Well, you might blame his wife. I mean, I don't think there's a guy that would name, that's got to be his daughter, obviously, although Quinn, who would name his own daughter Quinn Tallulah. That just doesn't sound right.
Do many men actually choose the name of their child?
You argue it.
You argue it. Well, all right, so therefore you don't.
Yeah, but if it was something completely off the wall like Quinn Tallulah, I mean, I would be adamant. I wouldn't allow that. You'd have to do a lot of negotiating to get me to go along with Quinn Tallulah.
You think that Quinn Tallulah is the daughter from Tabitha?
Yeah, Tabitha? That sounds about right.
Or Diane de Cordova.
Well, I'm going to look her up. Oh, Tallulah.
See, this is the kind of stuff, again, that you get nowhere else. Nowhere else on a financial subject. I mean, this is important.
It has to be the new girl because if you look up images under Quinn Tallulah, you end up with baby pictures.
Ah, so Tabitha is the mother of Quinn Tallulah.
That would be my guess, and Tabitha would be somebody with the name Tabitha would come up with something like that. And it's probably, you know, my granddad was named Quinn, and Tallulah is my favorite actress, or I don't know, I have no idea, or my mom, I don't know. But it's crazy. No, it's true. Nobody else talks about this sort of thing.
Nobody talks about this, and I got to tell you something. There were plenty of tweets that said we were the epicenter of information on Federal Reserve chairmen's wives and husbands.
Could be. Hey, you know what? It makes a difference. If the guy's got marital problems, it's going to affect his decision-making.
That's true. As a matter of fact, we could see maybe some of that maybe a little bit in a different light, but happening with PIMCO. You know, the whole argument that has been going on between Muhammad Al-Aryan and Bill Gross, this little tit for tat, and I'm leaving, and you didn't do right by me, and all these things. Big question was that going to affect the performance? Well, now, whether it did or didn't, by the way, whether that particular circumstance did or did not affect performance, now you see the headlines when you look at PIMCO that the total return fund trailed about 85% of its peers last month. Now, what does that put in your mind? That puts in your mind that, oh, wait a minute. There's some trailing going on like that because this fighting's going on. Maybe I need to pull my money. So now you got the PR machine on the mutual fund side of things and on the money management side of things trying to do what they can to cut into the good times of PIMCO Total Return, which has been a top performer for years.
Yeah, not anymore. These things come and go.
Yeah.
I remember when Seligman had a really good...
Seligman Telecommunications Fund, right?
Yeah, it was a hot ticket back 20 years ago.
Yep.
And it was just rocking for 2 or 3 years, and then you put money in by the time you found out about it, and it didn't do anything.
Right.
Yeah, it just went flat.
Hey, do you know a bubble tea, what that is?
I'm looking at the list here. You say bubble tea, and you're asking the question, is bubble tea popular where you are? I've never heard of this. This is some East Coast thing.
No, it's Chinese, actually.
Oh.
Which is much further east. Although, from you, it could be west.
Yeah, potentially.
It's different flavored teas. I mean, in China, you have it with like an iced green tea
bubble tea.
Yeah, and they have in it, they call them bubbles, because on the bottom are little tapioca balls.
Oh, yeah. We have these stores out here called 99 Ranch, and there's some other ones too. But 99 Ranch is the biggest chain, and they're Chinese stores. Or Asian mostly, but I think they're owned by Chinese. And you go there, and the things are huge. They're the size of, like, twice the size of a Winn-Dixie. Yeah, since I know there's one opening up near you. And it's loaded with stuff. And they have all kinds of interesting products, and all of it, you know, from China and the Philippines and Vietnam and Taiwan and the rest of them. And you go in there, and that tapioca thing you're talking about, I probably first saw those things maybe 5 to 10 years ago.
It's
in the soda.
Yeah, they're getting popular here. As a matter of fact, I happened to have bought my son really likes them, so I bought a do-it-yourself kit.
Wait, let's stop for a second.
Yeah.
Why would anybody like these things? Because it's really a kid's drink in Asia, and it's like you pour it in a glass, and there's all these little tapioca balls, and when you drink it, the balls dissolve in your mouth before you can even find them.
No, they don't. They're kind of chewy. They're like gummy.
Well, whatever the case is, you don't have to chew them. You can swallow them. But it's just like it's a kid's drink. It's a thing to amuse the children. So your son seems to be a bit old for this.
Well, Me too, then.
Yes, you too. I will.
I like it. I like the taro root. Taro root's delicious.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. Okay, let's see here. Greece is getting another $8.5 billion, you know, because they are putting together another bogus structural reform, and that's great. So, hey, let's give them some money. And what's interesting, if you look at the charts this year, the worst countries in Europe are the best performing stock markets this year and pretty much throughout the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is your standard reversion to the mean or rotation strategy, just like what happened today. The end of the month, last month, you saw that, well, Russia and various of the areas inside of like Turkey and emerging markets got killed, absolutely killed over the last month or two.
Mm-hmm.
So on Friday, out of nowhere, Brazil's market's up 5%. Well, what's that about? Well, you have to look at why that is, and it's because Petrobras was up about 10%, and that's a giant chunk of their market.
Huh.
And then you look at what's going on, and you look at the month-to-date rotation, you see that, wow, wait a minute. India, which was it's been doing okay, but really came out, and I mean, just last month was amazing. And you see that, again, the biotechs were sold off, the social media was sold off, and they just pounded into them today.
Huh.
New month. Let's change it back. And the whole idea is that nothing ever goes down. Nothing ever fails. So what we do is we buy the dip, find it where it's going to maybe base out a little bit and just buy it on the upside. Not that that's bad. It's just what's happening.
Yeah. Well, it's just creating a whole inflated market, which is, it just keeps going up. What are you going to do?
Yep. Now, speaking about inflated markets, did you know that home prices in four states hit their highest levels in history?
I find that hard to believe.
Well,
what states? North Dakota?
North Dakota, Nebraska, Colorado, and Texas.
Well, Texas is okay. I don't know why Colorado and Nebraska, but North Dakota is obvious because there's always a short. Nobody lives there, and then they have
Earl. There's Earl there.
Big boom, oil boom, yeah. And you got to build houses, and it's created a demand. Texas has got a boom going on because it's a very lively state. There's lots of work there. And it's become extremely popular for expats from California and other places. They all moved to Texas, and they've jacked the home prices up there. Texas prices are still cheaper, inflated as they are, than California prices.
Well, Colorado must be partially because of the pot boom.
That could be.
Right?
Whatever the case is, I don't see why Colorado – and Colorado's not a cheap place to live. Nebraska's the mysterious one, though. I don't get that.
I don't even get the Nebraska thing at all.
I don't get that.
Unless
at all.
It's – is it the farmland?
No.
Maybe the
– Well, farmland is always good in a downturn, so it's possible. But then you'd see some action in South Dakota, it would seem to me, and Iowa in particular.
Maybe it's because no one ever moved there, so they really never had any kind of a valuation of the houses.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those deals. Yeah. The prices doubled. What did it go from? It went from $1 to $2.
Right. No, but maybe nobody ever really moved out and changed around. But, you know, I'll tell you something about North Dakota. I met some people from North Dakota the other day when I was down in Cancun.
Yeah.
And
they were in Cancun living it up?
For a few days, yeah.
Huh.
And I said, okay, so we were talking. What do you do? Well, I'm in the landscaping business. I said, oh. I said, what about the wintertime?
Landscaping in North Dakota?
Yeah, yeah. I said, okay, so what about the wintertime? Oh, in the wintertime, we work on cars. We repair and restore older cars. A lot of muscle cars. I said, oh.
They have a lot of car enthusiasts in North Dakota for some unknown reason, yes.
I mentioned the name Tesla. They had no idea what I was talking about.
What?
I'm not kidding. Like, I said, no, let me maybe say it differently. Maybe there's some kind of an accent issue going on or something like that. I said, you know, the electric car, the sports car that's pretty popular called the Tesla? Never heard of it. I said, seriously?
And these guys work on cars?
Huh. Yep.
That's very peculiar.
I don't think it's peculiar. I think it's very interesting that maybe, and if you look at it, Tesla's not everywhere.
No.
So, you know, in the major cities, it's, I'm sure it's just like, you know, the ease of buying a snowblower in North Dakota. There's probably some brand or somebody says to me, hey, did you see that new jackknife? I might be like, what are you talking about? Ah, it's an electric snowblower. I'm like, sorry, I live in Florida. I have no idea what you're talking about. It can be the same thing.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
But I thought it was really interesting when I was talking to them, and you know, I kept on going on and on about this electric car thing. Like, oh, we like the golf carts, they said. I'm like, no. like a regular car. But I gave you a chart here that shows the current prices from the peak to the current in declines.
Housing?
Peak to the current in declines. One? Yeah, and the four states, you can see them, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. In white, there's no decline. So the other ones that you're looking at here are, for example, if you take a look at Florida, right? They're still 20% lower. In California, they're 15 to 20% lower from the peak.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Most of the
but some parts of California are back to the peak, I have to say.
Yeah, there's probably, but on average, we're talking about.
Yeah,
here.
No, the rest of the state's not.
So I'm looking at, Nebraska could be. Maybe because it's next to Colorado.
Nebraska, Colorado. No, there's no, it makes zero sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't understand the whole Nebraska thing. Well, maybe they have nothing else.
So what it's really saying here is the states in red that you have here.
Yeah, exactly.
Are the ones to invest in.
If there's going to be the continuation of a recovery, that's correct.
Yeah. So that would include for people out there who are not going to get to look at this map, in New Jersey and Maryland, West Virginia, Michigan, Florida, Illinois, New Mexico, Arizona, which is good to know, Nevada, and Idaho.
It's interesting that Nevada hasn't come. Well, I guess because they had such a gigantic.
Oh, it was a huge boom. It was outrageous.
Right.
And it's guy's still going to take a long time to recover. I just don't see it happening anytime soon.
West Virginia. I've been there. I drove through there one time. That was interesting. Maybe this is, by the way, this is maybe an April Fool's joke, but Kim Jong-un, who is a little fellow over there in North Korea that likes to shoot off rockets and, you know, do all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah.
Hang out with Dennis Rodman and all that. So, you know, they have a... they have another new, they're talking about a space agency program, you know, a space program, which is, they just named it today. This is true. They just named it today. The National Aerospace Development Administration.
Yeah, NADA.
Which, by the way, I don't know why they're doing it in their in English.
It makes no sense.
Why is that?
It may be a gag.
Yeah, because I don't think even, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. It could be instead of the word national, it could be or administration. It could have another meaning from what their word is.
Yeah,
this is one of these stories things again. You know what? I got tricked.
Well,
see,
it's a good one. NADA, yeah. DPRK. You know, no, I don't think so.
Now, China's stock market has been actually underperforming significantly. And another one of these crazy charts, you know, those bull and bear charts and comparisons to the 1920s and all that good stuff that goes on.
Yeah, that never ends.
Never ends. But there's one that I gave you that shows how the performance of the stock markets from – now, I guess this is from peak, from the months to prior and after the peak, of the peak of the stock market. So So this is 84 months later. The Chinese stock market is still 40% of where it was, while the S&P is 120% of where it was from the peak. So it went up, came down, went back up. And this is the Shanghai, peaked out about at 2007.
Yeah, the S&P seems to be the only one that's fully recovered. I don't see that the Chinese one's doing much worse than the what's this one here?
No, these are all comparing the...
Oh, I see, the 1929.
Yeah. The NASDAQ took 168 months to actually get back to almost 80% from the drawdown back in 2000. The Nikkei in 1989 still was lower, and it still hasn't recovered at that point.
Right, the S&P 500 is doing better, theoretically.
Well, look at that, though.
That's 1929, if it had crashed... to the present, and that looks like pretty much the 29 chart because it crashed like that.
It's amazing, though, how the S&P, how quickly this came back 72 months later after major crash.
Yeah, and then you have that another little dip there, which is the 37 crash, I believe. Mini crash.
Mini crash.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. The Chinese market, what you suggest is that it's time to reinvest in the Shanghai.
Yeah, I mean, and they've seen another drawdown. Although this year, I think they're so flat now.
The corrupted
right
is a problem. You know, these guys, you don't can't trust them.
Right.
They have a real
trust.
We know
their numbers are all crap. We know that they're all sorts of scammers. They don't have good oversight. The government doesn't. Listen, it's impossible for the government to have a good handle on all the economic stuff. I'm always amazed. Always amazed. How when China has a number, you know, let's call it the manufacturing number, that they gather all the information from all the provinces and cities and everything all over, right? And the estimate is for 50.2. And the actual number is 50.2. Wow. How is that possible?
Well, how is it it's not. That's the point.
Exactly the point. So this goes on all the time. They beat by 0.1. They just throw a number out there. They know it's a big joke. It's the whole thing's a big joke.
Yeah, so that's why their stock market is not going, you know, that's why it's sitting there like that. It's flaccid.
Right. All these numbers are a joke, by the way. The fact of the matter is that if we have record number of corporate corporations coming out with warnings, and the stock market's at an all-time high, and the stock market is forward-looking, and the economics are questionable, and the Fed is starting to slow down their asset purchases, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't matter. It's whatever the most comfort is in any particular investment. It's the sentiment. It's the level of, you know, where do you want to put your money is the bottom line. At the end of the day, sometimes the numbers don't matter for a while. They'll come back eventually. But, you know, that's the funny thing about fundamental analysis. They'll try to prove over and over the valuation of a stock. You know, that HP is worth 80 when it's really at 20 right now. Let me show you why it's worth, and it never gets there.
And there's a lot of these 50-cent stocks, which I always like to point out, that are selling for 30 bucks. Looking at these charts again. The most interesting one on here to me is the Nikkei crash of 1989 and how long it was, like, flatlined, and it didn't really start coming up for 132 months. I think that is where the Chinese things is headed, so it's probably got another 60 months to go.
Right.
Another
and
five
actually,
years.
You know, as of I think it was today that the consumption tax went into play in Japan. If they did not put on a consumption tax, they would have probably been downgraded by the major rating agencies because they have so much stimulus going in.
Oh right,
You know, so much money that was borrowed, and their stock market's down. I think about 12 or 13% this year. The Japanese Nikkei.
Yeah, and the yen's at 103. And the euro is at $1.38. Ugh.
And that's interesting about the euro because, you know, they tried to talk it down last week, but it didn't work. The power of this Fed that we have is just remarkable because the dollar keeps on shifting lower, even though, again, they're slowing down stimulus. And you can say whatever you want. Just the fact that they're reducing down the amount of bond buying by $10 is, in fact, a reduction in stimulus.
Wow, you just broke up horribly. You might as well say that again. They're reducing the bond buying by what?
They're reducing the bond buying by $10 billion per month.
Huh.
That is a reduction in stimulus. Let's go take a look at the stocks, why don't we?
Okay.
And by the way, this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. This is not a recommendation. This is a game that we play. By the way, what we're saying here is if you lose money in anything, it's not our fault, right?
Well, not only that, but this is a discussion, actually, for people to get into the mindset to, you know, determine what they want to – why are we pick these stocks. Why are we picking them? And maybe it would be of some value to people to kind of think along our lines and see what they do.
And with all the green that we're sitting on right here – not bad, my friend.
No, we got 33%, 24%, 23% gains, 33% gains, and these are all since the first of the year. There's a lot of gains. There's a couple losers. Might as well mention them. American Eagle Outfitters, which I was doing an insider buying thing, and I haven't seen any evidence it's doing any way, which dissuades me from another pick I might have made today of another apparel company. Global Brass and Holdings. Not sure why that is not doing better. And then you have a short on Caterpillar, which is not doing well. But the rest of these stocks are doing very well. Finisterre's way up. Dynacom's way up. Anheuser-Busch is finally going up. Fuwei Films, which was just lagging around. Of course, it's a penny stock. It's up to $1.71. And even Hopog Digital is Hopog is up to 18 cents.
Yeah, no, it's moving. That's a 7% gain on a 17
cent stock, yeah.
You know what? Just to get back to AEO, American Eagle Outfitters, I think at the time when you were looking at it, you said, you know what? There's somebody buying it, and he's like nuts. He's like, what's going on? And we thought maybe there's something brewing in the background about a buyout or something. And
yeah,
you were like,
I think I was suspecting. I think the rationale was a merger or acquisition or something along those lines, which I still think might be in play for a number of companies. And the one I was looking at today, which would be in the same league as a potential buyer or buyout. I think there'd be a potential stock to buy. It's $5.75, which is DXLG, Destination XL Group, which has got some insider trading going on in the way of big buys. In fact, this character, who's a director, he's been buying, let's just give you the amount.
DXLG?
Yeah, DXLG. He's been buying up the stock since just mostly in March. It just began in March. And he began with, here's $1.2 million, $1.7 million, $2 million. Then he buys another $2.1 million. Then he buys $6.9 million. Then he buys $1.3 million. And then for some reason he bought, and they're all around the same price, around $5, $5.50.
Now wait a minute. Is this the big and tall shops?
I don't know.
Let me look at this here, because it says that, let's see, headlines, profile, let's take a look.
So he owns 6 million shares at the moment.
Yeah, and big and tall, yeah.
Okay, so big and, well, I don't know what that's all about, but then again, we've been seeing mergers and acquisitions in this business. Your favorite company was just bought by Men's Warehouse.
Well, that's why, that's the whole point here. This is what they own. They own Casual Male. They own Casual, Destination XL, Rochester Clothing, B&T Factory.
Oh, Rochester.
They also own Shoes XL, Living XL. So it's like Living Extra Large, Casual Male Extra Large. These are all the extra large companies.
That's an interesting point, because there's a group of people in their 30s. I know this sounds weird, but I'm going to mention it. There's a group of people, most of them in their early to mid 30s, maybe getting a little older, that are all oversized. And I believe this came up during a period of time where growth hormone was in most of the beef. You'll find a lot of women who are 6 foot and taller, all in this age group. And I remember when they first started showing up, when they were late teens, you'd see these tall girls or high school girls, and they were like, holy mackerel, where did that? And, you know, then I realized that this was going on. I honestly believe, I know it's a crazy thought, but there's a big group of people, and so these big and tall stores should be doing well, because these guys are now getting upscale enough they can afford to, you know, go to these stores and pay extra.
So there's no concrete evidence linking premature puberty to growth hormones in these things. And teens and approved growth hormones and by Weight Watchers. It was in this here. So you're saying that the growth hormones that were used to really beef up the
beef. Fatten up beef. In fact, there was a period of time when I was working for the air pollution agency, and I was driving out. There's some other hormones they're using on these animals. There used to be a route I had to take to go look at some factories, and it was through a canyon. And there was a bunch of cattle in that area, and all the cattle, they're all steers, and they all had udders. And this was a big scandal during this period. There was a period of time where half the steers in the country were growing udders because they were shooting them up with various things, and they were turning them into cows, essentially.
Oh, you're saying steers had udders?
Yes, yes, and it was visible. They weren't like big, giant cow udders, but they were udders. And it became scandalous. And that was the period where all these tall kids started showing up. And I believe there's something, you know, I have not written an article or done a book on it or anything. It's an observation that I've always...
With that being the case, is that also why you see a lot more male boobs?
You know. Male boobs is another, yeah, could be. I think male boobs has something to do with it, but a lot of people think that the male boobs comes largely from soybean oil, which is an estrogen analog, And if people use a lot of soybean oil instead of olive oil or some of these better, more healthy oils, they get these boobs sometimes show up on certain men.
When I was in Cancun, I was at the pool, and there was one of those there. It was frightening.
Oh, God.
It was frightening.
Terrible.
Big guy, too. All right, so you're saying that you're not going
well,
to...
Well, DXLG, I don't know. It's a cheapie. I like the price.
Well, I mean, the thing is that if there's a consolidation in play with this industry, you would think that the potential for Joseph A. Bank and Men's Warehouse to now want an extra large, especially due to the fact...
Yeah, okay, I'm in. DXLG.
Okay.
Even though it's a little redundant, I try to avoid that, but
maybe you'll get an extra large return.
I'll put that in.
Okay. So I'm going to put 218, 218, and that's a buy.
Yeah.
Okay. There were some stop outs here, by the way. Today you were stopped out on Liquidity Services. I don't know exactly what the news is. I haven't looked. We can look. But Liquidity Services, which is symbol LQDT, was down 14% today. Yep, it sure was.
Yeah.
Let's see what the news was. What was the news? Let's see. It must have had some earnings or some kind of a weird downside announcement or maybe government issues. Why did they fall? I'm looking. Okay, McDermott Medicines, we know that. Liquidity Service, the operator is online.
Well, I was up on that stock, right? And then I'd lost.
Yeah, yeah.
But I ended up losing 3%, so it's okay.
I guess it was. Yeah, it was just,
that's the way.
Yeah, I guess profits were down there.
The way
which is really
played.
Interesting because we saw Richie Auctions was doing well, and I thought this would probably do well, but I guess not.
No.
Uh-huh. Solar City is bouncing back. Boy, that thing moved around pretty well. I have to look at that date and that 326 was last week. I don't know if that was stopped out. It went down as low as I think 58 or 59. I don't know. We'll have to look at that. Fannie Mae's up 33.5%. I mentioned that earlier, that Ackman's taking a stake in it. I was thinking, although we'll have to see how this plays out, really did rock it up pretty well today. SoFund Holdings is kind of like the equivalent of maybe a Zillow or a Trulia that we have here.
Yeah.
But in China.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
And one of the things we know is that they're really trying on one hand to curtail the excess spending on homes in the area of speculation and trying to clamp down. Every time they let it go a little bit, you see that housing prices and everybody gets very excited, but then they say, hey, wait a minute, this is getting crazy again. So SoFund Holdings, I guess, put out a report that houses in the area that they were reporting on were up a bit and this and that, and all of a sudden the stock took off. Stock is down from about $90 to about today was, I guess, about 70 and change, and then rocketed right back up as the markets came up. And as people got giddy about buying again. But what's interesting
What's the symbol?
SFUN. What's interesting about this is there is, if you get over the level of about 81.5, which is about 10%, I guess, from here. If you get above that level, there's some definite upside opportunity. But there's downside to about 53. If you look at the weeklies and the dailies, there's a big hole underneath.
Yeah.
If it does fall down. So we'll have to see how this plays out. And the other thing is, for what it's worth, the stocks that have been falling for a while and then they have a few days of a rebound are oftentimes very good to take the short on.
So you're taking a short on this?
Yes, I'm taking a short on it.
Oh, okay.
So I got a Solar City and a Solar Fund.
Yeah, you have a lot of solar stuff going on.
Or SoFund. But SoFund is not... SoFund has nothing to do with solar.
Yes. Okay. Anything else?
And we got the short on Sina, by the way, which is another Chinese stock.
Yeah.
It's up 8.5%. So, Nope, there is nothing else. And we will talk next week. And I have lots of things to bring you. We'll talk about a little pay thing. I have to, on the sidebar, we'll talk about that.
Okay. I'll see you on Tuesday.
Thanks.
Adios. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.